Good morning. You're listening to Conservation Corner here on 99.5 FM, KTWH LP, Two Harbors, Minnesota. I'm your host, Emily Nelson, and today we're going to be talking about common buckthorn, an invasive plant species that can be found throughout much of Minnesota, including the Arrowhead region. My guest, Jeffrey Flory, is an invasive species technician for the 1854 Treaty Authority, which is based in Duluth. All right, well, thank you so much for joining me. And today we're going to be talking about buckthorn. And I think in Lake County, common buckthorn or European buckthorn is the main problem. I don't know, it's glossy, even present.
Glossy, as far as I know, is not present in Lake County, but it is present in St. Louis County.
Okay. So just starting off, I wanted to start by talking about the origin of buckthorn and how it got here and why it's a problem.
Certainly. Common buckthorn, European buckthorn, is originally from Europe and Western Asia, versus glossy buckthorn is from primarily from Asia, North Africa, and parts of Europe.
Do you know how it got to Minnesota and maybe when it became a problem?
Yes. It was brought here in what people know around the 1800s. Some people speculate even before that in the late 1700s. And it was planted as an ornamental in yards, but mainly it was planted as hedges as a windbreak, mm-hmm. or as a green fence. And it was ideal because it's very hardy, doesn't break from windstorms, it handles droughts. And so it was very ideal for its purpose.
Do you know, did that start mainly maybe in southern Minnesota as far as like farmlands and...
Well, the years that it was brought here is for the country as a whole. When it was introduced into Minnesota, I'm not certain on that.
Okay. And what kind of problems does it cause?
It causes a lot of problems. It outcompetes our native plants, both trees, shrubs, and forbs. Provides very little food for our native animals. That would be deer, other wildlife, game species, as well as insects and pollinators. Birds will eat the berries, but it's kind of debated whether it is actually beneficial or harmful to them.
And then when you mentioned deer don't like it, is that one of the problems with it, is that deer will then preferentially feed on the native species, leaving the buckthorn?
Yep, that is definitely one of the scenarios. But eventually buckthorn will just take over, and then you have also fewer deer present. There's also been new research that was conducted at Lincoln Park Zoo, and they found that buckthorn has been contributing to the decline of amphibian species.
Really?
In their populations. Yes, the chemical compound Imodin is the chemical that gives mammals diarrhea. It's a huge laxative to mammals and is projected, depending on how ripe the berries are, it is either a laxative to birds, or at a certain point it actually causes constipation in them, which further increases the distances that they're spreading the seeds. But more research needs to be done on that. But essentially that chemical is in the leaves, the fruit, the bark, and even in the roots. And so that leaches out from the buckthorn. And if it's by a wetland or some kind of water body that has frogs and other amphibian species, it prevents their embryos from hatching. And if they do, it causes a lot of deformities. And, they've done some research in these wetland habitats and found that, they have high levels of this chemical compound that has greatly studies have shown have decreased the amphibian populations.
I've heard of buckthorn being called allelopathic, so they put out a chemical in the soil that inhibits other plants from growing around.
I think that's the same chemical, yes.
Okay, interesting. And how would you say buckthorn primarily spreads?
It is actually primarily spread by birds. They will eat the berries, and a lot of times I will be walking in the woods removing buckthorn, and I'll see a patch of buckthorn just in the middle of nowhere growing underneath, an aspen tree, and probably birds sat in that tree perched and let go of their mate. And, you know, building up the seed bank. And, you know, that's when you get the seedlings that grow into the saplings. Yeah. And so, and as well as birds will, when they migrate, then that really spreads at long distances.
Mm-hmm.
Because then they're really moving distances before they finally deposit the seeds.
Sure.
And what I found in my searches for buckthorn is that they tend to follow, the seedlings and trees tend to follow ravines, streams, and river corridors. Because without the trees, it's much easier and quicker to fly through. So that's more likely the chance for the seeds to be deposited in those habitat types.
Yeah.
Besides bird spreading, buckthorn, rodents will spread it as well. Not as far of a distance, but they will create their little fruit caches over the winter. And so I've seen little pockets of hundreds of seedlings within like the size of a silver dollar. So that's another way that they're transported. And then also humans can transport it. One vector would be construction and logging equipment. Mm-hmm. Any mud that's stuck to that equipment can harbor the seeds, and if they don't clean it from site to site, any of that mud that comes off at a new site potentially will create a new infestation of buckthorn. Also, chippers. If somebody happens to chip a bunch of buckthorn to get rid of it, you know, if they don't clean it out, there's all those berries within there that can then spread as they chip something else, and
yeah,
those seeds can then be within the other chips in the new site.
Yeah.
And then bikers, ATVers, snowmobilers. Again, any mud that contains the seeds will spread the buckthorn.
Yeah.
Hikers will do it too.
Yep. That's what those boot brushes are intended for.
Yep, that's right. Those boot brushes that were once are used for horses to clean their hooves are great for cleaning off your boots.
Yes.
Ideally, you don't want to clean it at a new site. Before you get into your car, clean your boots at the parking lot.
Yeah.
Before you move to another area.
Yeah. What kind of habitats would you say are the most vulnerable to invasion by buckthorn?
I would say forests are the most vulnerable for buckthorn. Upland forests for common buckthorn and more wetlands for glossy. But I found common buckthorn eventually invading wetlands, and I found glossy buckthorn eventually invading uplands. So they might have their preferred habitats, but when that gets saturated, then they can evolve and adapt to move into the non-preferred habitat types. I've even seen them growing in open habitats. Their spread might be slower, but they're still able to eventually expand there. And probably their spread in that habitat is slower just due to the grass thatch. They need direct contact with the soil before they can actually germinate. And that's actually one reason why earthworms, which is another invasive species, actually helps promote the spread of buckthorn. Because our natural deep leaf litter habitat in forests actually help reduce germination of a lot of our invasive species like garlic mustard and common buckthorn and glossy buckthorn.
Mm-hmm.
But when the earthworms eat up that leaf litter, it not only improves conditions for buckthorn to grow, but it also inhibits our native tree populations from growing, because that leaf litter actually protects the seed from drying out and from predation from squirrels and other animals. And it also is the kind of the bottleneck for nutrients in the forest ecosystem in North America. So the glaciers, probably the pressure and also lack of available habitat, if there had been any native worms, were all killed out from the glaciers.
Mm-hmm.
And because they move so slowly, if there are any native earthworms in the south, I mean, they still would never have reached up to our area at this time without humans spreading them.
Right.
But these worms are also not native, and so then they drastically change the nutrient cycle in our forests.
Mm-hmm.
So where the bottleneck used to be in the leaf litter, it is now all of a sudden completely available, and our plants and trees can't utilize it all at once. So any that don't get absorbed then get washed away with any rain events. And so then you also then lose nutrients within the forest system.
Yeah. Northeastern Minnesota, forestry is a huge industry. And I was wondering if buckthorn has a very big impact on that.
It does have a very large impact. Firstly, I mentioned about the earthworms having an impact on the leaf litter, but also buckthorn has that impact as well. Because when it becomes the monoculture, you know, the leaves don't provide much protection for the seeds, but also when they break down, they break down very quickly. And so there again, it promotes more seeds to germinate, and it also introduces more nitrogen into the system that helps other invasives that require high nitrogen. What's unique about North America forests and ecosystems is it was always very low in nitrogen, so that it was always a hot commodity in our environment. Whereas in Europe, its ecosystem is built very differently, and it's always a high nitrogen environment, and so those species require it.
Oh.
But also, buckthorn has very shallow roots, and so because of that, it absorbs a lot of the water at the surface before it even reaches the deeper roots that our native trees have. Our native trees, the roots that are close to the surface, were meant to collect most of the nutrients, which were, you know, not available very often with the leaf litter at the time. And then the deeper roots were meant to tap into that water source down below. Well, if the buckthorn absorbs it before it reaches there, or at least more of it, it creates more drought-like conditions that can impact our native trees. So it's also hurting the current trees that are living right now. It also creates really dense thickets within the forest environment. And I've had to try to walk through that, and I can't get through it. Foresters would have the same problem. You can't even get equipment through this without having to deal with the infestation. So that cost of time is a huge depletion on profits for any harvesting attempts. But also these dense monocultures, it grows so thick that it becomes way too shaded that then the seeds of our forbs can't grow. And then even our trees, either the seeds don't germinate and they just eventually die or get eaten, or if they do happen to germinate, it still gets overshaded that the seedlings eventually will die. Oh. And so there's some areas in the Twin Cities where they've had these beautiful oak forests that without the oak recruitment and other tree species having that seed bank coming in and replacing dying and dead trees, they're just having a buckthorn thicket left over, and that's eventually what they're going to have if nothing's done about it.
Yeah.
And so then there goes your timber harvests.
Right. And they're called buckthorn. Do they have thorns that actually would hurt you if you're walking through a thicket of them?
Common buckthorn does. What happens is the end of the branch dies, and it kind of reduces back down and forms a sharp point at the end. And that's where it gets its name, buckthorn, because their buds are sub-opposite. And so when you look at it with that thorn in between it at the end of the branch, it kind of looks like a buck's hoof. So buckthorn. One other thing to keep in mind is glossy buckthorn, even though it's called buckthorn and it is in the same family, it actually rarely ever has a thorn. And so you can't rely on that for glossy buckthorn.
I'd just like to remind everyone, you're listening to Conservation Corner here on 99.5 FM, KTWHLP, Two Harbors, Minnesota. I'm Emily Nelson, and today I'm speaking with invasive species technician Jeffrey Florey for the 1854 Treaty Authority about the invasive plant species common buckthorn.
So one of the important things to learn if you want to address this problem is how to identify buckthorn. And so what are some of the key characteristics at the different life stages?
Some key characteristics. Most of the time people are looking for leaves because it's the easiest to identify. People kind of shy away from identifying it by twigs. To describe the leaves, I would say they're kind of egg-shaped, and minus at the very tip, it kind of protrudes a little further out. There's heavy indentation at the veins, has kind of a shine on the top of the leaf, a glossy look, and the common buckthorn has teeth that are dentated, so they're kind of blunted. So rather than having a sharp point, they're kind of more rounded. We already talked about the branching and the thorns. One thing to realize is with all plants, there's plasticity, meaning that they will make adjustments to fit the environment. Mm-hmm. Rather than dying, if they're in a really dry spot or overshaded, buckthorn will just reduce its growth. Okay. And so it can be confusing if you come across one of these buckthorns, because instead of forming those thorns, they will, each year, the branch would only grow like half a centimeter, just enough for leaves to grow on it, kind of like a ginkgo tree. And eventually, over the years, it'll keep forming these short, stubby branches called branch spurs. Easy way to see those would be on paper birch. You'll see those. You would be a great example to see what a branch spur looks like.
Okay.
And then that's the rare occasion where you actually see the terminal bud of buckthorn instead of the thorn, because the branch didn't die off. But moment the canopy opens up from a tree dying or being blown over by a storm, or maybe a good year rain year event, if it's in a dry spot, it can then rocket and start growing normally with the long branches, tip of the branch dying off and forming that thorn again. So there's a fun variance to keep in mind. That way you don't miss out on any buckthorn reproducing and spreading.
Yeah. And what time of year do the berries form?
Berries form in, I would say, mid to late summer is when they're starting to form, and then they're ripe around fall time.
Okay.
And then they'll persist throughout the winter.
So they start out green, and then they end up sort of...
They end up
what do you call that?
Dark purple to blackish color.
Okay.
The glossy buckthorn, their berries will go from green to kind of red, maybe a little purplish tinge to it.
And then, I don't know, how would you describe the bark?
The bark, when it's young, it's smooth, a light gray color, and has these kind of whitish horizontal stripes to it. That we call lenticels.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of trees actually have that feature. One thing to easily confuse it with is choke cherry. When it's a young choke cherry, the bark looks very similar. When it starts aging, the bark starts getting shaggy, kind of like burnt potato chips. And it gets darker to a brown color. And let's see. And also, depending on its situation, it can either have a single trunk, but a lot of times it'll have multiple stems coming off of that trunk pretty low to the ground. And if it's been damaged or cut, it becomes a hydra. It just has hundreds of sprouts that come up, and it just makes it all the more difficult to deal with.
And how tall does it usually get?
Depending on the conditions, it can get up to about 25 feet tall. And about maybe 10 centimeters in diameter. Pretty big girth to it.
Yeah.
But in the Twin Cities where I've worked before, I've seen them get even bigger. And it's scary.
Yes. What time of year is it most easily recognized in the forest?
One is in the spring. In the Twin Cities, it's the first thing to really bud out, which is how it can take over forests, because it's utilizing more time for photosynthesis to grow. So whereas our native plants tend to not bud out quite yet because they're expecting the frost, a potential freeze again, buckthorn is taking advantage of our warming climate. I've noticed up here in Duluth, though, that chokecherry and juneberry will actually bud out before buckthorn. So here it's not as reliable. But late fall is the prime time to locate it, because when all of our natives have already dropped, most of them have dropped their leaves or all have dropped their leaves, buckthorn still has their leaves. Again, taking advantage of more photosynthesis time to store more energy in the ground and give them that extra edge against our native species.
Yes.
So, you know, when I'm walking in the forest, I'll see mostly browns and yellows and the fall colors, and then in the distance I'll see some dark green still.
Yep.
So common buckthorn probably holds on to them the longest, even through the first couple snowfalls and frosts, where the leaves will actually freeze still attached. Definitely the number of leaves are much less by that time. But honeysuckle also holds on to their leaves longer, the invasive honeysuckle. But they'll turn yellow and fall off earliest out of the invasives. And then glossy buckthorn, they will also drop their leaves before common buckthorn.
Do you know how widespread they are here up in the northern counties?
Key thing is knowing their location. They could be much more widespread than what we know.
Right.
And that's the key thing, is to locate any new infestations before it's too late. But as of now, probably the densest area is in Duluth. It's also spread down into Cloquet. All right, so it's also known in Two Harbors, Tower, Ely. It's also in Sudan Mines and also Bearhead Lake State Park.
And that's why it's great to have people realizing it's a problem, because a lot of people love hiking along the shore and they can spot it and let us know.
Yes, that is definitely key. The more eyes you've got out there looking for it and documenting it and informing important parties about it, the sooner we can actually deal with it.
Yeah. And also having people know that it's not just totally widespread in the northeastern Minnesota, so we are trying to stop it. Because
correct.
Maybe people from the Twin Cities are just like, oh, it's that again. It's everywhere
right.
in the Twin Cities.
It's too late in the Twin Cities. I would say Duluth's kind of on the knife's edge. We might be too far gone, or we might be able to put it under control. Odds are we're probably too late. So probably Duluth is the biggest front mm-hmm. that we probably can't eradicate it from, and we'll always have to deal with it surrounding Duluth. But if we can try to keep a buffer around Duluth clear of buckthorn,
yeah,
the better. But glossy buckthorn is also present here in Duluth, and it has also been found in the Cloquet area and also in the Sudan Mines. So it is spreading as well.
Okay.
And so there's our other front that we need to deal with, it because Ely is not that far away from Lake County. That's another door into Superior National Forest.
Yes.
And sadly, not enough is being done in that area to deal with it.
And I would imagine it could go up into the Boundary Waters.
Very
with,
easily.
You know, all the hikers and
very easily. As far as we know, it's still contained just in Ely, but I don't think there's been enough surveys in the state forests and Superior National Forest surrounding Ely
mm-hmm.
to really know the extent.
Do you have any recommendations for the best approach to use when you're going to treat buckthorn? Remove the seed trees first, or, you know, I've read from the DNR that you should start at the edge of a mm-hmm. infestation and move in towards the center of it.
One issue is there's no actual ideal recommendation on this. It just depends on the conditions, the circumstances, and what you've got going on
mm-hmm.
And the time of year. For instance, in the wintertime when I'm treating, I don't want to treat new infestation sites or try to locate them, because I'm not going to find them.
Mm-hmm. I'd
be trying to search for a needle in a haystack. So when I'm treating in the wintertime, I'm targeting the densest spots. So that way I'm efficient with my time. But under the right conditions, it is ideal to target the new infestations that have spread from known infestations. And then to target those known infestations starting, like you said, from the outer edges, and you're working your way in. When I'm doing it, it depends on the property owner and what they want me to do. So some want me to just eliminate all the buckthorn. And so, you know, I'm treating both female and male buckthorns, mm-hmm. common buckthorn. But in some areas, if there's lack of time, or you also just have a large area, it's definitely ideal to target the female buckthorn first with those berries. If you can stop the buckthorn from reproducing, or at least slow it down, you know, that's a lot fewer seeds that you have to deal yeah. with from germinating. Another thing to consider too is by just removing all of it, it's opening up the canopy, And even though we talked about birds and other ways that the seeds are spread, the majority of them actually drop underneath the buckthorn. Mm-hmm. And so you remove the buckthorn, you then just have a carpet of seedlings rise up from the ground, and that's all you see. I've got plenty of pictures of this, and it's scary. And I've even seen the results, if nothing's done about it, where you literally can't see more than 3 or 4 feet in front of you because it's just so thick with saplings that are, you know, 10 feet tall.
Yeah.
But the stems are, you know, only the size of a button. Because since they're all competing, they're going to grow taller than girthier.
Yes. So how would you deal with that?
If you come across patches of seedlings, if it's the first year, prescribed fire will kill them. If it's past a year or two, the fire will kill the top, but the roots will be able to survive that and resprout. So a couple fires would work. Mm-hmm. Another would be foliar spraying with triclopyr. Problem with that is the residue of the chemical does then impact the native species when they come in after you've removed them. You can try to spray then in mid to late fall when all the natives have gone dormant, so that way they're not intaking any of the chemical. But that, from my experience, that's kind of a hit or miss, because sometimes if you're a little too late, even though the leaves are still attached to the stem, it's still not drawing in any more nutrients. And so then you've added chemical to the environment, but it didn't actually kill the buckthorn.
Okay.
So it's a very small window of time for that, but it's very effective if you hit it just right. And it has less impact on the native species then.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time today, but please join us on our next episode, which airs in 2 weeks, where you can hear the conclusion of this interview, which includes a lot of great information about how to treat a buckthorn infestation. Conservation Corner is produced by Lake County Soil and Water Conservation District, with funding from NOAA and the Office for Coastal Management, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and the Clean Water, Land, and Legacy Amendment. Thank you all for tuning into our show. I'm Emily Nelson, and I hope you have a wonderful afternoon.